This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Grace Under Fire is now number one in the ratings. Brett Butler stars as a single mother and recovering alcoholic recently separated from an abusive husband. That wouldn't have struck most people as the perfect subject for comedy, but Butler had already built some of her stand-up comedy act around her own related problems. The creators of Grace Under Fire discovered Butler through her stand-up act. In fact, the character of Grace was written around Butler's life, although Butler, unlike Grace, has no children. The first joke in the pilot about her subliterate husband came right out of Butler's act. I asked what other parts of her life she brought to the character of Grace.
Basically, that she was a blue-collar, literate, very iconoclastic, satirical, who happened to have been in a relationship in which she was physically abused. And I have fought hard for the fact, you know, to make her also someone who was in recovery from alcohol and chemicals. It's real touchy there because everybody thinks in Hollywood, they go, oh, I don't know, somebody's done that. And I couldn't care less who did it. I don't care if Larroquette or Sharon Gillis or Mr. Magoo was sober, that I wanted to do it in a way that was just, you know, kind of like show the dailiness of it without, have you know, you couldn't have a sitcom with a mom, like, you know, passed out on the floor with a baby crying. But who knows, maybe that'll be next. But I wanted that to be part of her too, you know, that it's not just a struggle once you put the bottle up, it's kind of a struggle to live humorously and sober too.
Is that something you don't... Go ahead.
Basically, she's me. The character Grace is me, except they had to justify my existence with the presence of three children.
Mm-hmm. So how much have you made the former marriage on the series like your marriage used to be?
It couldn't be that way. I was battered badly for 3 years, and I don't find it amusing or anything. And when they were talking to me about making my character a former, you know, a victim of abuse, I said, as long as it's in past tense and you show her go through the, you know, the decision-making process of, like, putting her life together. I've read a lot of reports that said I based my stand-up act around my first husband. That's not true. No one would have listened to that. I probably did 5 minutes in a one-hour show about him. And it's been the choice of focus since I got a TV show based on someone. And since we have brought him back as a character this year, Grace's ex-husband, I think we've redeemed the choices that they both made somehow. Like, Grace can look at him with compassion, if not altogether forgiving him periodically. And, you know, I've said this before, and I know it's a really heterodox opinion about domestic violence, but I was battered, so I'm allowed to say it, in that, you know, I was so screwed up and young, and so was he, that if I had been a man, I'm not sure I wouldn't have done the hitting. That was just the game that we played at that time. So in this sense, I'm really glad we gave a human face to this, you know, butt of jokes, which I fought with last year. The former executive producer of the show was the one who really did some of the most... I believe that every time you man bash, it makes the woman seem that much smaller. And I hated some of the stuff that we did.
Can you give me
him.
An example?
Yeah, just making him continually, like, you know, ignorant and inbred, and just, you know, some of the crueler references were things that Grace would say actually in front of the kids. And I think it's just really important that she not do that. My mother was, my real father left when I was four, and my mother never said anything bad about him. And she basically let his absence be all that indicted him around us. And I just think that's really positive. You can tell your best friends things, you can tell your shrink things, but you don't take stuff out on your kids.
I want to play an excerpt of an episode in which there's flash flooding all around, and the ex-husband stops by to make sure that you and the kids are okay, mm-hmm. and then he tries to convince Grace to take him back.
I've stopped drinking. Mostly. And if I had a really good reason to, I'd stop altogether.
Mm-mm. You're not pinning this on me. This is your thing.
Well, sure. But if I wasn't drinking, then I wouldn't be raising my hand to you.
Well, you know, it never was the raising of the hand that bothered me, Jimmy. It was the contact. How'd I know your aim just wouldn't be better?
I just did that because I didn't know no other way to win an argument.
Well, that's funny. Got to where the only way I thought I could win the argument was to get you to hit me. So there we are.
Would you explain that line for me that Grace says, I thought the only way I could win an argument was to get you to hit me?
I look at my role, because I can only speak about my situation, you know, but I have spoken with other women who've been, you know, former victims or participants in domestic violence. I do choose the word participant. I don't have kids. That must be even worse. I mean, that it is worse. It must be infinitely worse to have, like, a financial burden placed on you and, you know, where you're going to survive with your children. But in my case, the word win is an ironic choice of words, and there's probably, I won't use the word humor, but there's kind of satire in that. The only way you could win a fight, in other words, what was going on was such a pathetic dance of power. All relationships are power struggles, and in domestically violent ones, they become even more so in a literal way, that anybody who bullies someone else or imposes their physicalness over them, they lose the fight spiritually, morally, scientifically, every single way you can think of. They lose. They just do, and they know that. No matter how righteous they feel at the moment of striking out, they lose. And it is kind of a form of power. We're also, and plus, the person who's the victim knows somewhere in the bargaining. And none of this was conscious when it was happening to me, by the way. And I, you know, there'd probably be women who would argue with this. The woman, the recipient or the victim, knows that you're going to be the recipient of pity and kind of apologies and making up and that kind of thing. You know, that was a way of getting some power for a powerless person.
Did when you signed up for Grace Under Fire, what was the character, someone who'd been beaten by their husband? Or is that something you added?
They based the whole thing on me.
Right. So that came with you.
The only thing that was there when I got there was kids and a single woman, and the rest of it was me.
My guest is Brett Butler, the star of Grace Under Fire. She has a Showtime comedy special this Saturday. More after this break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Brett Butler, the star of Grace Under Fire. I know you grew up in Georgia, and you had four sisters. Your father left when you were four. You've described your mother as poor but cultured and left-wing, and agnostic in the middle of the Bible Belt. Mm-hmm. Was your family considered eccentric?
Sure. Yeah, but most of the people who would think of us as eccentric did not have that word in their vocabulary. You know, godless butler girls might really be more apropos.
Now, did you take that to heart?
No, I was really straining at the bit. I mean, sometimes I did. You know, being poor, you know, there's no such thing as a class struggle when you're poor. There's not a struggle to it. It's just a sense of feeling inadequate continually. We didn't have a father. We didn't have, you know, we were in like a, you know, free lunch program. You always kind of felt second best. And ironically, the ones to me who contributed to making us feel that way were the ones who were the most religious. So I came away with a real distaste for wanting to join anything, be it a, you know, a church or a group. I remember I begged to be in Girl Scouts. And after like 2 weeks there, I told my grandmother, I'll kill myself if you don't get me out of this. You know, I just, I didn't like it. And I came from parents who were kind of iconoclastic and didn't know exactly what to do with it. I mean, my mother was just so, if you look at her wedding picture, I this is the greatest example. 1957, Atlanta, Georgia, my mother's hair was like 2 inches long and a feather cut. Like, and I asked her, how did you have your hair cut like that when all the other women had those lacquered bouffants? And mom said, well, I saw Gina Lola Brigida with a haircut like that in a fashion magazine. And my mother had a Nehru collar wedding gown without an inch of lace on it. You know, I mean, this was like a silk dress. She looked like something from, you know, 1969 or 70 in the middle of all these, you know, bonnet-haired women. It was so bizarre. I mean, she was just, I mean, and I know that's just an image that I'm relating, but the fact that she wasn't afraid to dress like that or be like that when no one else was basically tells you how I was raised.
Now, I know when you were 16, you were on your own. I believe your mother was very sick.
Mm-hmm.
So what did it mean to be on your own? Did you live by yourself or what?
Yeah, you know, I'm just, after a year of doing this, you know, I just really, unless it, you know, people think it's like really important for people to know about this, you know, quasi-tragic life I've had, I wonder why people are so curious about that. Of course it was not fun to be alone when I was 16. Can you imagine how that feels? You know, I'd love to tell you I started up my own business, I was making $40,000 a year, and parents, who needs them? But that's not what it was like. It was pretty grim for me. I was well on my way to drinking alcoholically by then and living a life that you would kill yourself if your own daughter led. I consider that an adequate answer.
How does it feel different to talk about the rough spots of your life now as compared to if, like, we were talking about this 5 years ago when you were doing a lot of comedy, but you weren't really very well known?
I'm just incorrigibly honest about things. I really am. But nobody was interested in it 5 years ago is the only difference. And I'm glad this didn't happen to me when I was any younger, because I've really been making peace with myself from, you know, like, emotional damage that I had. I didn't just, you know, live this, like, you know, pick a daisy, skip down the street life before I entered that marriage in which I was battered. It took a lot of years to, you know, build that kind of person who would allow those things to happen. It took years after that to recover from it.
You had said to me before that you didn't want to be a celebrity poster child. And I'd like for you to try to... put your finger on what that is and why that's so disturbing. You know, what the phenomenon is and why you don't want to be a part of it.
Well, I already am. I never wanted to be on a sitcom either, but look how quick I said yes. I never did want to be on a sitcom, by the way. I turned down every other audition. I wouldn't go up for them. I said, nope. They're going to make... I didn't live in L.A. I lived in New York. I was trying to make my bones. I'm afraid, you know, by being that, I'm participating more in the illusion. You know, it's America. It's really media-strong country where media rules and people do believe things they read, if they read at all. And you know that. I mean, we've just really gone downhill. And by doing that, I'm afraid that, you know, why couldn't I be just some interesting woman unto myself without being so totally connected to my past as my image? But maybe people will get tired of it or something. You know, it's one reason I really envy and admire and feel for Roseanne, because she just beat everybody to the punch about everything that's ever happened in her life. She's like, well, you know, okay, fine, you're going to write that about me? Well, here's something you never thought of. Plus, I still am a product of the South, where it's sort of, you know, considered rude to talk about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I'm, you know, my problem, you know, there's people who are in my family, not close to me, not close relatives like mother and sisters, but there are people in my family that didn't know this stuff happened to me until they read it in a damn newspaper.
I'm interested in your early days when you were developing as a comic. You moved from Georgia, where you grew up, to New York. And I imagine...
Georgia to Texas. The reason I mentioned
Texas
is because it was hugely important. I started comedy in Texas, in Houston, Texas. I did not start in Georgia. And I've compared it to this. People who don't live in the South don't really understand that I would draw these distinctions. But in Georgia, it sort of was like, you know, I waited tables for a long time. And they go, well, sugar, you want to be a comedian in that precious. Now go get me some more coffee. And she the cutest thing. But in Texas, it was like, hell, girl, you want to do comedy? Great. Now get me another beer. I mean, it was still very man-centered, very macho and kind of that. But the Confederacy didn't mean as much to them. Women's roles didn't. Houston, when I moved there, was the oil boom was just ending. But there was a real free-spiritedness to the place. And where my humor was not considered threatening, where my outgoing kind of tomboy nature and the fact that I read books were not viewed as these, you know, bizarre facets on this untoward woman. I felt much more accepted in Texas.
In your new Showtime special, you talk about getting breast implants and you say that you're the only person in Hollywood with bleached hair and fake boobs who complains about how phony Hollywood is. Why'd you get
them? It's a joke.
I know,
it's
funny.
A joke.
It's funny.
Why'd I get them?
Yeah.
Why do you think I got them?
Because you wanted larger breasts. Am I right?
Bingo. Yeah. Yeah. Because I just was so convinced that my being, my whole being was incomplete without breasts that matched the largeness of my wishes. I don't even have it. There's nothing else about it. I mean, Barbara Walters sat me down to do an interview and said, Brett, weren't you concerned about the operation? Why did you do it? And I said, if you can look me in the eye and tell me I'm the only broad in this room who's had stitches, then I'll answer your question. You know.
Okay. So just one more question on this. Do you try to wear clothes that show them off?
I don't know. Have you seen me on the show?
Yeah.
On Grace Under Fire? Does it look like I do?
No.
All right. So when I go out on weekends, maybe I will. You know.
Now,
I'm also, I like being 36 years old and being good looking when I want to be. I'm not beautiful, but I like it. I'm about as good looking as I need to be. I'm interesting. I'm asymmetrical inside and outside. And I like it. I don't have any apologies for it. I mean, you know, I feel pretty good about it.
Brett Butler, she's the star of Grace Under Fire, and you can see her do stand-up in her new Showtime comedy special this Saturday night. This is Fresh Air.